I don't know. It's kind of like a Disney princess thing going on with they're probably styling the hair.
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello everybody.
And Tanya Gates.
Hi everybody.
This is the eve of the Las Vegas Nopen. I'm very excited.
Oof. I'm a sleepy boy trying to recover from my last weekend and getting ready to become nocturnal for this weekend. And I'm still super keen.
I hope that by the time that you hear this, I get it out early enough to where you tune in later today to watch the coverage from the Nopen. And we're going to talk about it a little bit on here. We have a list, incredibly competitive list that I'm looking forward to see how they play out. And then I'm looking to see how those lists journey from pilot to pilot until we get to the finals.
Well, what I'm going to be really interested to see, so a couple of my boys, I've got a couple of my Australian lads chipping in for this, a couple of the better players from Queensland, and a few of the lists that they took to a recent major, 100-player major in Australia, were also taken to the Las Vegas Nopen. And so I'm interested to see if they can directly correlate, because, I mean, this guy who played, he played 60 Word Bearer Possessed and came second out of 100 players. I'm interested to see if that, you know, translating into other people's hands, how well it does. Or how much of it is the pilot? How much is the list? Because I'll actually just get to actually see it play out, and I'll get the commentator on it as well.
God, that is a brutal list. So that's I think been architected by Liam Hackett. Am I getting that right?
Correct. Yeah.
And you can find these lists. So if you go to www.lasvegasnopen.net, you can and go to the list section. You can find the list that we're talking about right now. You can also check out the schedule that we're going to be streaming. Yes, it's going to be a brutal schedule. You can find the games being streamed on the streamers networks themselves, or you can come check us out at the hub where Adam and myself will be running some commentary on these games, two games at a time, at least two games at a time, and interacting with folks in the chat on the Ocho Twitch stream. But all the links are there. I'll put the links in the show notes. Come join us. Look, we're doing this thing for charity. Contribute if you can, but if you can't, just come hang out. You know, that's we really want to see what you guys think about this thing that we put together, this thing that a team of folks have put together in conjunction with Frontline Gaming, because we can't go to the Las Vegas Open this year, which we miss it. We hope this is like the first and the last Nopen, so we can all get back to seeing each other's faces again. But in lieu of that, come check us out, hang out in the chat.
Exactly right. And it is hard times for a lot of people out there. It's not exactly the most stable point in human history. So by all means, contribute if you can. If not, just join in, chat, sit in the chat, talk, laugh, enjoy. That's all we can ask for.
Yes. We're going to be doing it all day. So even if you can't be there the whole time, leave and come back or whatever. Streaming on your big screen. Chill out with us. It's going to be amazing.
Absolutely.
I will be drinking lots of coffee.
I'm going to have to concoct some kind of engine fuel, rocket fuel to keep me going throughout this. I got a couple of 2 a.m. starts as well, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, so we're talking about this list that has, you know, three giant squads of Possessed in it.
And it's a lot more than meets the eye. Like, you look at it and you think, he's just going to run at me and, you know, you just smash my face in. I just got to wall him off and do all these defensive things. And then he just sits there. I was streaming games of his, and he just sits there across from you and racks up points until such a point that you have to commit into him. And it's really interesting because, I mean, of course, you know, you play defensive. Defensively, you wore yourself off, and then Liam's quite happy to just sit across from you and beat you on the primary and force you to come to him, and then it's twice as bad.
Interesting. So we're not going to be able to get to every list here, I don't think, but I think it's neat how, so the lists are been paired together by pods of streamers. They're in their bubble. They've interacted with each other this whole time. We're doing this COVID safe. So the people that are playing the games are, you know, in their own little bubbles and have been respecting all the guidelines and everything else for their various countries. This is not a single nation event. This is across multiple countries and continents.
Yeah, spot on. We have people from, well, it's pretty much colonial or former colonial England at the moment, isn't it? Apologies. We have the Spanish guys. Crazy excited to have them involved.
We are going to have Spanish commentary as well on the deep. So I got there's going to be lots of ways to interact with us over the weekend, and we hope that you do it. Some of the other lists that jumped out to me is there's a Super Stout Blood Angel list. I mean, you know, I was going to say something about it, but I do like it and how it but it's got to, unfortunately though, it's got to pair up against something that's not the best match for it, which is a Harlequin list in the first
round. Something that can match it for speed and explosiveness. You're absolutely right.
Well, so Harlequins, I mean, they've got a lot of things that get around your fancy armor save. Yeah, that make themselves a little bit harder to hit, make themselves easier to defeat, you know, to wound you and stuff. I mean, there's all kind of things that the Harlequins can do that the Blood Angels may not want any part of. And so I think it's going to come down to playing the mission.
Spot on. And I think after I played Harlequins on the weekend, and man, I was unprepared for how well they played the mission. He didn't exactly engage me much on the field. But the thing is, like, like smoke and mirrors, I couldn't really engage him either. And I just think Harlequins are just so well poised, especially as a general's army. If you want to go deep into something and really, if you just like jank and being like, okay, you think you're going to fight me on your terms? Ah, sorry, mate. Not on my terms.
I'm going to boost out of here, you know, and the threat ranges of these things are enormous. Basically table-wide threat range on some very deadly things. And so with two armies that are really killy and can do lots of damage to each other, I think it's going to become, well, who gets the jump and then who can play the mission better. But I'm going to we'll save some of this table talk, I guess, for when we have to do it on camera. I'm really looking forward to that matchup.
Yeah, me too.
Is there anything that's jumping out at you, Adam, you really want to see in round one?
I really want to see Death Guard. We're actually going to have a player using the new Death Guard codex. So it's not primary Death. Well, it's not mostly Death Guard. I think that's TJ's list. Yeah.
Yeah, TJ Lanigan. Who, I mean, he's actually a master of what we can call chaos jank. You know, like a chaos soup type list, and has done consistently well with that through the years. And I don't think this is going to be any different. I think that he's pairing up against, I think, a deceptively strong list by a great player, Brad, in round one. So this is going to be an more interesting game than I think than the list on paper maybe illustrates.
Sorry. Chaos has like lots of moving parts in it, right? So, I mean, obviously everybody's like world-class players who are playing in this, but like if TJ wins and then his list goes on, do you think it'll be like easy for the next person to pilot if it's not TJ Lanigan?
That's a big factor in this tournament. It really plays a hand in that. And I honestly don't. I think the next person to get this will not have that savvy.
Well, yeah, just running down what he's taking. He's got like the Unkillable Order Change. He's got Magnus and Mortarion, and then a bunch of Nurglings and a bunch of support characters here, there, and everywhere. Like, he's got a Poxbringer and the Changeling and stuff. And some of those things are very easy to get a lot of quick work out of, but then, you know, might not be there in the late game. Things like Magnus, you know, you can use him once and then he's just gone. What do you reserve in this list? What stays on the board? What gets deployed? What gets the buffs? It's really going to be quite interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, you're exactly right. One out of position, one false move with Magnus, and then that bit of your army is just down the drain.
Yeah.
And someone who is used to moving big models around, is if they're not used to that, it's going to be a struggle for them. But that's part of the going to be the interesting thing about this event. It's not the same. It's single elimination. It's lists that are going down the line. And then, you know, of course, I think we're actually been instituted some floor rules that allows the new pilot to be able to interact with the architect of the list if they need that information.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like, you know, what's the actual reason for having XYZ upgrade, and do I actually need to use this to win a game? Stuff like that is really important for people to be able to have. I mean, if you were playing at a tournament, I don't know how things really are in America. I've only played, two tournaments over there. But we in Australia, we talk a lot between matchups. We'll talk to previous opponents. We'll talk to our actual opponent. And we're usually pretty forthcoming in how things work. I think... it's pretty unanimously accepted that gotchas is a way that a lot of people don't want to win the games. And so especially when people are playing two unfamiliar lists, one person just having a little bit more knowledge, or maybe having played against something a couple more times, could be all the advantage in the world.
Yeah, and I don't know if this kind of table talk or consulting will be like active coaching. That is not something that you ever see in a tournament, really.
No, no, no.
But I think we're going to be pretty lenient on that to avoid those types of things and keep it interesting the entire way.
Well, because the last thing we want is for people like playing 5-hour games because they don't quite know some of the mechanics. And they spend a lot of time looking at codexes and things. So it's more of like, you know, you can have a little FAQ with the author of the list prior to your game, like 5-10 minute check in with your coach. But yeah, definitely not on the fly, having just getting coached through a match, nothing like that.
Yeah, so the sleeper, what could be a real sleeper, is the Dark Eldar here in the list, piloted originally in round one by the play on tabletop guys.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. it's JT, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah.
I love JT, by the way. He's a Me wonderful too. Human.
So this has a lot of power here, and he's almost like, he's reducing his own. He's not taking full advantage of the FAQ. There's not a billion racks and a billion bikes in this. But I still think this list has the tools to make it out of round one.
So at the tournament that I was at this weekend, it was called Adelaide Uprising on Best Coast Pairings, if you want to look it up. But there was a gentleman named Gabe who went very, very deep into the tournament, had probably the best strengths of schedule of anybody at the event, ended up dropping, I think it was 3 games by the end of it. But that was because he played the first place player, the third place player, the fourth place player. Like he played everybody in the top 5 pretty much.
Somebody plays the guy that goes all the way, you know.
Exactly right. And so, but he was playing mono Dark Eldar. And I was calling some of his games, and every game he was playing, I'm like, oh, Gabe's losing so much stuff. He's on the verge of being wiped. And then he comes and gets a 96-point win. And you're just like, man, it's just sheer scoring ability. Like, you don't have resilience. You might not have as much damage as other ones, but you just got scoring ability. And as long as you always have that, or you're able to manage it properly and not give it all up early, you just get really good scores at the end of the game. I think there's a lot of power in that, as you said.
Yeah, I think it really does have enough of the damage output, and I think the 4+ to wound on a lot of things is going to play with the list that I'm seeing here at this event.
Yes, but on.
Hey, we'll see. We'll see. These are actually how it's shaken out, and this was organically too. Like we put. I don't want to say restrictions, but we had some talk and counsel about, you know, maybe what to play for, but only for like model choices to limit the amount, to limit the amount of proxying or whatever as things went through the round, or, you know, but we also scheduled that like who would play the rounds and not necessarily direct the list. So very organically, we arrived at these lists that are opposites of each other.
Yeah, exactly right. Because naturally, one of the pieces of information these players were given was take something you would take to the LVO. And of course, that, you know, brings into account a lot of different things. For some players, that means taking things and trying to meta against the things you expect to see. And for other people, that means taking, you know, what do you think is actually just the best list?
The most brutal thing on the planet.
I can definitely say, like, I expect Siegler's list to go very deep. His Necron army with the Silver Tide with the Silent King. I expect that to go very, very deep. But yeah, there's some definite jank out here that can stop it. Look, like I got a guy down here named Aaron Green who's playing literally 120 Scarboys with Gazkul, and he has been crushing it everywhere. So even that one could just take off.
That seems pretty good.
It is. It's just actually pretty good. It's one of those lists where, you know, we talked about maybe going first isn't that good anymore. That list going first is absolutely terrifying because the board's already gone. Top of your turn one, cool. Sorry, bottom of turn one, you've got no board left to take. He's taken it all.
Yeah, to change gears slightly is that, you know, you mentioned something about when you're making a list now competitively, why would you even risk not going or not getting the, you know, going second? Why would you even pretend like you're going to go first very often?
Yeah.
And I caught myself doing that, making a list.
Yep. What did that look like? Like, what was the actual choice where you're like, oh, I can't take that because if I go first.
I really wish I had something to expound off on here, but I just put in 10 more Sanguinary Guard. I want to have something poetic here, but but that rang in my head when I'm making this list, and I'm like, you know, what could be, you know, I know I'm going to be doing some playtesting. I want to go first, of course, but man, I know we're going to run at least one scenario where I'm not going to go first, and then man, like 50% of the time I'm not going to go first.
Yeah.
So if I can avoid like a mistake that matters for that, then why not try?
Absolutely, you're right. Yeah, if you can mitigate for it, you should. I wish there was a little bit more agency in it, but I'm not quite sure how they. Yeah, look, it's fine.
Well, no, we need more. We need more time to exist with this whole change in scoring in round five, and see what that matters. But I think that sometimes we plan list of how we're going to zone out certain things and how we're going to, you know, get our pieces, our pawns moved in round one and whatever. And sometimes that just all goes into the pot when you don't go first. And that's when I think that if you're making those type of decisions, then maybe you've messed with your list a little bit. We'll really question your decisions.
If Red was here, he'd say something like, no battle plan survives the first engagement with the enemy. And yeah, it's absolutely right. Like, you can make all the plans in the world, but not knowing if you're going first or second, like, it's better. It's probably better just to be fluid in your list and in your, you know, deployment and outlook on the game, rather than pigeonholing yourself into one or the other. Because I do want to go second. I feel like I can build a good list to go second. I feel like one that will take the best advantages. But then I get exposed when I don't go first. And what is that? That's not good enough for me.
I just feel like if I can avoid giving up a kill or something, then might as well.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's well said.
I said carry it with me. I think about it. Of course, I get to hear him three times also when we talk about it and when I'm editing. creates that impression.
So how many Sangat are you putting in, like, your average list?
Really about 24. I don't go the full 30 most of the time.
Shocking.
Yeah. But look, man, they're very good.
Yeah, very good, man.
I'm not going to apologize for it. They are awesome. Yeah.
Have you guys had much chance to unpack the Death Guard book?
From when we reviewed it last week and the week before, I've just about settled on a list. And I actually did a little bit of talking with Don Hoosen, who is a renowned Death Guard player. Mm-hmm. Known for innovative lists that challenge things, the list that you would look at and go, I don't know how he wins with it, but yet he wins. I kind of asked him for a couple of sample lists that we could talk about here on the show, and he hit me with one that it is not subtle. but I'm okay with that. That's actually more a little bit my style of play. He actually hit me with one, and I'll maybe post this in the show notes. That's more vehicle heavy, and I thought that's one of the things that we hit on a couple weeks ago when some of the rules started hitting the community page was, you know, all these little bonus things on vehicles. You know, it really makes them a lot more playable, a lot more viable as options than they were in the past.
Well, yeah, just the minus one damage is such a huge boon to vehicles. I mean, not saying the 5+ invul and feel no pain wasn't either, but still really strong, undeniably strong even. But sorry, the reason I was asking about Death Guard was because I've been trying to figure out what their alpha unit is, so to speak. Like every list so far, or every supplement seems to have like this alpha unit. Sangard for Dark Angels, Blood Angels, Thunderwolf Cav for Space Wolves. I'm actually not sure what the Necron would be now that I'm just thinking about it. Maybe they've got a couple. Maybe they've got Wraiths. Maybe they've just got Sidekick. Yeah, yeah. But a lot of them seem to have this one unit that just gets the best of everything that they do. I was just trying to figure out if Death Guard do.
I believe it to be the Destroy Terminators, if you're looking for something like that.
Cool. It would have been the last edition. It was the Blight Lords for sure. Yeah. Sorry, last
and Blight Lords probably 50-50, on that.
I mean, those models, oh, so good. I had a bloke at this last tournament. He was using, different tournament, but he was using the 30K Death Shroud, or the precursor Death Shroud. And man, they are great models too. And I love them.
I'm going to change my answer to the Blight Lord Terminators.
Is that what you thought?
Well, no, yeah. Because I, as I'm looking at him now, I think that the getting the extra benefit of the, like, the Blight Launcher.
Actually having a legit shooting attack rather than, I think it's a strength 3 flamer on the...
Yeah. Actually having something they could do, like, 29 inches, they could roll up and pop off some D2 weapons.
Yeah, reach out and do something.
Yeah, I mean, the Reaper auto cannon is an option too, but it's not a plague weapon. So, you know, as far as like getting all the rules, quote unquote, from the Codex, I think the Blight Lord Terminators with their things like the plague, the bubonic axes, the plague weapons with the Blight Launchers, anything, you know, the mixture of things they can put in there with the flails, you know, all the good stuff.
Praise be, the flails got nerfed. I'm not saying the flails are bad now. They're just not the all-conquering single thing in the entire, lexicon of melee weapons.
They were a bit obnoxious before.
Oh, mate. So I had a good friend of mine charge, I think it was a bomb of 8 Alaris into it would have been the Terminators. And yeah, lost them all to 2 flails, just killed all of them, all 8 Alaris, like 700 points of his army. He's like, yep, that's not supposed to be there. That's not supposed to exist.
So in the second list Mr. Hoosen sent over, it has 30 Terminators in it.
Yikes.
Yeah, 20 of which being Blight Lord Terminators.
Yikes.
Then 3 fat units of Death Shroud Terminators. Because now, I mean, the Death Shrouds, I don't remember if they was this way before, but they go up to 6-man units.
So it's 3 to 6?
Yeah, I think they were just 3 before, but now it is a potential full-on 6.
Nice. Yeah, cool. I can't remember because I never saw them.
Well, you would see them when they there was a play to occasionally bodyguard. You know, like Martarian, when you could do that kind of thing.
Yeah. But even then, like, it's just not something that existed down here, which I think is a shame. Because Scythe Terminators are sick.
Oh, they are. And these look really cool, too, because they are. They're like half again as wide as any other Terminator.
Thick.
Yeah.
And smelly boys.
And real I use them in Kill Team. I don't know if that makes me beardy or not, but it... But even in a Kill Team game, he looks like the boss.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever asked you this, Tanya, but are you much of a Chaos head, or are you more Imperium side or Xeno side?
I do have a Slaanesh themed, I'll say it in quotes, army that I could play in 40K, but I just play Age of Sigmar with it.
We've all been through that phase. Like, you know, it's unusual.
I have played a few games of 40K with them, and they're fun, but I prefer them in Age of Sigmar.
Not fair. So if you were gonna hail a god in 40K, it would be Slaanesh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. I mean that is the stealth power right now in the demons.
Mm-hmm. And in Chaos Space Marines, I can tell you right now, the Empress Children Terminators are some of the best Terminators in the game, and you wouldn't think so, dude.
I mean, tell me why.
So auto charge from reserve being the first and most prominent thing, like e.g. So it's a 98% percentile charge from reserve
because you
roll 2 dice and all you need is any one of those dice to be 3 or more. And then for 1 CP, you can automatically change one of those dice, e.g. the other one, if it's a 1 and a 3 or a 2 and a 3, into a 6 and make a 9-inch charge. On top of that, they just went down in points in the latest points changes. Once again, combi bolters with +1 to wound and double shooting being Slaanesh are still pretty effective in a lot of matchups. Mostly non-Space Marine matchups because, you know, you're not going to kill many Blade Guard with your combi bolters. But Reaper water cannons on them are still quite nice. Combi melters are still quite nice. And a single lightning claw. So on the charge, what you do is you give them prescience in your psychic phase. So they hit you on 2s when they charge. That means that their Death of the False Emperor is going off on 5s. And then you take an icon and excess, meaning that they get to the Death of the False Emperor on 4s. We know that Imperium makes up somewhere between 45 and 55% of most metas, and most people live and people play the game. And so you take that to a 6-game tournament, and 3 of those games, you're just going to get 50% more attacks with that unit. That's going to have 4 attacks each on the charge. So 40 attacks a lot of the time is going to equal somewhere between 55 and 60 hits, and which is kind of ridiculous that they're all going to be -2 rerolling to wound. Of course you can +1 to wound them again. So I've commentated on games this last weekend where a single unit of Terminators came down and just killed 4 units. Like just killed two kills in the shooting phase, another kill in the shooting phase, charge and kill something in the fight phase. And then, you know, they get a wrap off on something. And so it's just, they just dominate a portion of the board. On top of that, you can use things like Delightful Agonies to give them a very nice feel no pain with a 5+. And there's a bunch of other things you can do. Like you can warp time them, of course. A lot of these things are going to change. Admittedly, a very large amount of these things are going to change going into the new codex. I think there's been a lot of foreshadowing in the Death Guard book, hasn't there?
Well, so yeah, I mean that what you're talking about is speculative because, you know, what do we know, whatever. But the huge changes in the Death Guard book, number of possessed, you know, no hateful assault, things like that. You know,
no death to the false emperor.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
No death to the false emperor. Yeah. Yep. Veterans of the Long War.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so technically it's like a 2 CP version of Veterans of the Long War, which is a bit more restrictive. But yeah, it's definitely not what it was. And interesting to see how it progresses further, because it's nice to see an actual Chaos Space Marines Marine unit, like not some fringe cult build or, you know, whatnot. Because, I mean, Noise Marines have been pretty good for a while, but it's not. It's just nice to see like a Terminator or a Chaos Space Marine being somewhat competitive.
No, I like. I mean, I like what you just described there, because it's been a long time since I've, I guess, remembered that the Death of the False Emperor is relevant, like really relevant.
Really relevant right now, yeah. I mean, when I guess when more Xenos books comes out and things like that, there will be a very big rebalancing that we're going to be seeing over the next kind of probably 6 months. And then hopefully we get a couple of years of stability where we can just, you know, see things percolate and different things are good at different times.
Well, I mean, if the other Chaos Codexes do change and then get all this extra stuff like the Death Guard have gotten, I mean, that's still good times.
No one's going to be unhappy with that, like, swathe of awesome buffs Death Guard got.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if they have these other type of restrictions like the Death Guard Codex has. But that's actually one of the things that got brought up in some of the comments was, like, you know, why do these restrictions exist? Like, well, it's weird. It's like, it's both, it's like a vestige of theme that's crept its way into the book. It doesn't strike me so much as, like, a balance choice with the Codex.
I mean, so one of them does, and that's the limitations of Demon Princes, because we know Demon Princes for a long time were the best thing going, and people would spam them at nauseam. But it's been a long time since that happened. But I do agree. I don't like you. What kind of battlefield is it in the 41st millennium that has six Demon Princes? You know, three from different gods and stuff.
I really like playing Demon Princes.
See, you're the problem, Paul. This is you. This is your fault.
Yeah. So Demon Princes in Chaos Space Marine books, their wings let them move 12. That's right, right?
Yeah. You were saying that they now just move 8 base, yeah?
Well, yeah. So the Death Guard Demon Prince has a movement of 8 base, but you can give him wings and lets him move 10.
Yeah.
So 2 extra inches, but he gets the fly keyword.
Yeah. Well, actually, that'll depend on a lot of things, whether you want to pay that. I might not want to pay that anymore. I think you said that last week, didn't you? You said like, oh, maybe you just don't want to take wings anymore. Because are they still expensive?
That's a good question. And also, I guess it's been a while since I've built a Chaos Space Marine Demon Prince, but I'm pretty sure they move 12, don't they?
It's because you built your 9 back in the day and you were just like, oh, yeah, I won't need it anymore. but, you know, I think they might have always moved 10, but I could be wrong.
I'll check in a second. I don't have to guess. You know, the wings are 35 points to get the 2 extra move and a fly keyword.
35 points. There's no way. There's no way you can justify that on more than one dude. And that one dude's probably like packing a bunch of relics and stuff to make him super.
Thank goodness. You can only take one Demon Prince. So there you go.
It's one Demon for detachment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. You're right. 35 points, man. Yeah, you might not take that. You might not take that, dude. You might not take that flying DP.
Yeah, I'm going to look up Chaos Space Marine Demon Prince wings.
In honor of Don, because me and Don have been chatting a little bit, I would like to say Plague Marines are amazing. For 21 points, I think they are phenomenal.
So I completely agree, but why are you thinking that?
Because they're 21 points. I think that's so cheap for what you get. They're still T5. Well, sorry, it's 1 point more than an Intercessor, yeah? So an Intercessor is 20 points. You get Strength and Toughness 4, 2 wounds, 2 attacks, all that stuff. A Plague Marine, for 1 more point, you get 1 more Toughness. You get the same 2 attacks now that Hateful Assault's been chucked in. You get -1 damage, and you get way better customization across the unit than you do with the unit of Intercessors. Unit of Intercessors, you can just customize your sergeant, and then, oh, cool, which gun do you want, and do you want grenade launchers? You can go really deep down the rabbit hole with how you want to kit out your Plague Marine units. I feel like that just makes them a lot more interesting, a lot more exciting, and they're legit, like, on the mass, something like twice as durable as Intercessors now.
Oh, wow. Well, that does sound pretty good. And I did just confirm that the Chaos Space Marines moves 12 with the wings.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. 35 points for 2 more inches of movement. Not that worth it for me.
Well, the fly keyword is not what it used to be.
Exactly right. It's not the all the conquering best keyword in the game it used to be.
But what's interesting about it, though, is with the terrain keywords, that fly does let you kind of ignore some of those.
Yeah, and doesn't do anything in the charge phase anymore, does it? Like, because it used to be able to just jump over people's lines and things, and it was pretty obnoxious.
Making me break out all the books, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Feverishly for the 2 books here. Somebody talk about how cool Abaddon is. So.
Tanya, have you figured out a Morty solution?
God, no.
How many kill cannons can you get in there?
I'm not really playing guard right now. I'm playing orcs.
Also, so. Orcs have the kill cannons, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Orcs have the kill cannons.
On what?
Battle wagons.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm not taking any small vehicles.
Sure.
I told you guys, I'm locked in with this, like, cheesy kill tank idea. Like, I'm doing it.
Man, kill tanks are so cool.
Heck yeah.
They're so cool,
Were you around when they had the Battle Fortress? Like,
you can still use the Battle Fortress in Apocalypse.
So cool. Yeah. So cool. Yeah. How much random like bits box do you have lying around? Put it into another box, pour in 3 liters of super glue, and shake. And then put whatever comes out on wheels. Behold, your battle way. Whatever.
I'm not kidding. A buddy of mine built an orc army. It was themed after Mad Max.
Nice.
And he got a 5-gallon bucket and just threw all the bits and stuff into the bucket and then just pulled them out, you know, and then made whatever he was trying to make, the battle wagons and stuff. It's freaking that's awesome. Legit. I mean, the guy's a genius. It's not like, you know, I mean, but that was just his way about it, was pretty cool.
I do have like a big box that's like full of junk. Like it's like broken models and just like random bits and stuff. And I've been building like junk bases for my characters and like my big models, my death treads and stuff like that. So, brilliant. I'm really actually having a lot of fun with the orcs, which is really good because I wasn't really having a lot of fun with Guard, you know, in like November or so. So it's like really nice to just sort of like relax a little bit and like sort of commit to a list, whether it's good or bad, and just like, this is the plan for like the next, I don't know, like 6 months at least. And
that's
then
okay, you're gonna get real intimate with that list. And
I am
know exactly. Yeah. You'll know exactly when you're in trouble. You'll know exactly when to burn those stratagems at the right time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you pick up a couple extra W's.
I like hearing that. I think this is a good time in the game to just commit to one thing and just stick with it. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in the world and a lot of uncertainty in 40K. Good time to just expand a single faction you really love. Fill it out. Get those obscure bits and pieces that you've never thought are good, but you know you've always wanted.
Yeah, and like from playing Guard and just playing like Mountains of Infantry or whatever, I went into Orcs and I was like, I don't want to do that again. Like, I don't want to paint that much infantry. So I was like, I'm going to go super elite with it. I've played 2 games so far. I won one spectacularly, and then I lost one by a little bit. But in both cases, it was like the most fun that I've had playing Warhammer in like over a year. So
brilliant. Yes. Orcs are just like, everyone loves playing against orc armies. Orc players are the biggest joy of any player base. Orcs are the biggest joy.
I do feel a little bit sad that I'm playing now and like not in 7th when you could like literally call the wall, you know?
I miss that. I wish they'd bring that back in the new codex, because you're in this big hall with a bunch of different mates, and then you hear one of your friends just bellowing at the top of his voice, and you're like, you go, son, you get him.
Yeah.
I found the thing on charging. Fly models can move over other models when they make a normal move and advance, or when they fall back.
Yeah, so in the charge phase, or fly doesn't work at all.
Yeah, you have to. The only thing in the charge phase, you have to declare targets, and then you cannot come with engagement range unless they're a target of your.
Yeah, exactly. Targets. Spot on, man.
Hey, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about this nonsense.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Everybody, we are back. I still got Tanya and Adam here.
Oh, hi there.
Hi, everybody.
This past weekend, we had a preview. New miniatures. Crazy looking new miniatures.
You're talking about the vampires?
Yes, the vampires. And so the Warhammer Underworlds, the Crimson Court. Oh, my goodness.
Dear oh my, they are phenomenal.
Yeah, like vampires kind of my jam.
I'm down. I can get with it.
Well, this
as long
war
as it's
band,
not the twilight-y vampires. You
yeah,
know?
Well, no, I don't think any of these sparkle. But this war band, and they talk about this in their preview, so I won't rehash it completely. But it's kind of evocative of the some stylistic throwbacks to the old vampire courts from the old world.
They very much like, well, especially the chunky bloke with the mace. He looks like just a magnificent rendition of Manfred, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Like that was the dude that was on the griffin or whatever, wasn't it?
Yeah, man, he was on the horse first, and he had the big coattail of spikes coming out of.
Yep.
And then now he's on one of the He's one of the Mortarks on the spectral
right.
thing, dude, whatever it is. Seahorses of Souls is what it's now going to be called in Adam Land.
Oh, but these paint jobs, I mean, they're just done immaculate. Like, these are going to be really hard to replicate, I think, for mortals.
The skin is so well done, man. Like, the pallid and yet, like, detailed skin is very nice.
Yeah.
I've painted a couple of vampire models. I got a really nice Conrad that I really enjoyed learning how to do a lot of layering on, because his red armor was really, really cool for that. But, man, like, the issue with, like, the skin tone like that, it can just come out so boring and flat that it's hard to get expression into it because it's so pale.
Yeah, but I even love it, like the antiqueness of the weapon. The patina on these figures' weapons is perfect.
Yeah, it's so funny that the first one I saw was the one I liked the least as well. I know some people out there may or may not agree with that, but the first, the one with the bats in its hair, I was like, maybe I'm not going to like this new range. And then these guys came out, I'm like, holy crap,
that's amazing. That's from Sigmar, Age of Sigmar, the one with the bats in their heads from Sigmar. This is Dire Chasm. And, you know, they're all the things in a warband are basically like their own character models kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although I do happen to like that model also. I don't know, it's kind of like a Disney princess thing going on with, they're probably styling the hair.
Actually, you're right. You're like Belle in Beauty and the Beast, and she's just like hanging out with birds and stuff. This lady's got, she's 10,000 year old, and she's like progressed onto bats.
Oh, and what's the, in the vampire like covens or whatever, what's the one that are more like wolf-like and bestial-like and stuff like that?
As in the Vargulfs and the Vargeists and those guys.
Yeah, those guys. There was a name for that. God, I'm spacing.
Yeah, me too.
Well, anyway, there's one of those in this warband.
Yeah, he's kind of got gargoyle wings, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's my favorite out of all of them.
I think they explained it as that he is exhibiting some of these bestial traits because he's maybe not as well fed, like on blood, as the rest of these vampires.
Well, yeah, we could do a whole episode on vampire mythology, but I also like how many different things you can go down within that. Like, you know, it's what the whatever you feed on is how powerful you'll become. Like, feeding on humans is obviously the most powerful, enriching like food source for vampires. But, you know, if you feed on bats, you start taking on bat, you know, bat like. Things.
Oh, Adam knows something about vampires.
A little bit. I was quite big into the Anne Rice books when I was younger. Like Tanya Sladesh phase, I had a vampire phase.
We all have our thing.
It's not a phase, Adam. It's who I am.
I didn't grow out of it, okay?
Hey, this is a judgment-free zone, but I do want to skip over this, not to cut you off, but if you want to expound on any more of this, secrets, I'm here for it. But Cursed City, Warhammer Quest, Cursed City. So I loved Warhammer Quest. I love it. Still love it. I mean, it's, you know, playing through the maps and stuff you can do. You can get people that have no interest in playing a strategy game, but they'll come over and play with these figures. So, you know, as part of the thing I appreciate about Warhammer in general is the figures, and you can still play with them. And then when we got Warhammer Quest, Cursed City teased in this preview, and they hit us over the head out the gate with this beautiful Witch Hunter figure, and then something like right out of Pan's Labyrinth with the, you know, creepy looking, I don't even know what it is.
I think it reminds me of something out of Silent Hill, actually.
Oh, there you go.
So yeah, it creepy. Does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's Gorslav the Gravekeeper. That's his name.
Apt. Apt is the only word I have for it.
Oh, but God, that's so with this Witch Hunter. I mean, it's begging to be many things in 40K. I mean, it is just a snip or two away from being a crazy Inquisitor, but this model has it all. I'm talking like big, chunky, you know, the coat we all wished we had as kids, the stakes that we all carved out of, you know, downed limbs, not carved or pretended that they were, vampire hunting stakes or whatever, swords in our yard. Just looks impressive.
It does, dude. This, say whatever you want about G-Dub's rules writing or their balance or whatever, but man, you can't really say much bad about the models. They just keep knocking it out of the park.
Well, if this is anything, so the Warhammer Quest, the Silver Tower that we got, it came with a bunch of figures in that box.
Yeah, a bunch of really good figures as well.
Yeah, so I mean, that's where the Gaunt Summoner came from originally, I think. And the
yes, correct.
The Ogryd Thaumaturge.
Thaumaturge, yeah.
And so if this is, Oh, and all like all kind of horrors and the not the God, those Zinch things. I don't know. I'm spacing on all the names today.
Zangos.
Yeah, that and there's a ton of stuff. So this is just two of the figures that we can expect from that box.
Yeah, man. It's going to be impressive. It's already impressing.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, how many years are we advanced in model design from when Silver Tower came out the first time?
Yeah, we are quite wells along since then.
I got goosebumps.
I just want to caveat what I said before about the models. Like, because I do rant about the models a bit. And they're like, well, Adam, you just fanboyed for a minute there, didn't you? And I will say that for, like, props to G-Dub, for every model they bring out that I don't like, there's, like, sticks they've brought out before that I'm just like, are amazing.
I thought you were going to try to backtrack on some of that vampire stuff. You're like, oh, no. I don't know nothing about throwing mustard seeds down. I don't know anything about running water. I don't know anything about silver.
The only one I'm not a fan of is the lady with the stuff in her hair. I was like, yeah, and mostly because she's standing on a rock, and I'm just so done with models perched on rocks or models leaping from a piece of metal or
the Harley
whatever. Everybody
really
just
mad about that too.
Just flat foot yourselves during the battle, please.
Every Harlequin is on a piece of Wraithbone ruin or something.
I can let Harlequins get away with that. I have to. Those models are amazing.
Well, look, if this is as any indication of where that range is going, though, I'm there for it. Like, the Sigmar models have been gorgeous. Like, even the ones, you know, with the Lumineth.
Mm.
Need to get your hot take on the kangaroo soldiers.
Yeah, they're cool. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the question is why, but rather than that, you're just like, it's good. It's pretty fun.
The aesthetic is
going in a different direction to what I thought it was going in as well. Like the whole bovine aesthetic, they seem to be just breaking away from it, going more down a very oriental.
Well, it's elemental based.
Yeah, elemental, but elemental shamanist oriental kind of feel.
Yeah, and so and I don't know that these are. I mean, look, they're fox spirits, they're dinosaurs, kangaroos. I don't know what they're supposed to be. Probably all the above.
Yeah. I mean, the posing is actually, I should pull them up. The posing is great. The kicky, whirlwindy fox deer guy.
Yeah, it's a great model.
Fox like creature, demigod empowered by the winds of Heish. Just in case you thought that Teclis had peaked with the mountains.
Did you get what they did there?
That was good. Oh, no.
That was good. I like it. That model is incredible. I mean, the whirly stuff
with the mountains.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're getting scarred cast to write these little blurs.
I know, it's scarry, subcontracting. I'm not the biggest fan of having whirly stuff, but the actual deer model is so, so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And
like a centerpiece model, though. I mean, like, that. I don't know how tall it is. It's probably, if I had to guess, it's probably the Incarn.
The Incarn. Yeah, it could either be on a 40, it could be on a 50 or a 60, really. I'm looking at the model now.
I would guess that's a 60.
I hope it's a 60. I hope this guy's pretty big.
Yeah. God, just the Realm Lord, Lumineth Realm Lords, they're just gorgeous figures that seem to be almost, I mean, like a canvas for painting, like an artist canvas.
I'd love to see them painted up in dark colors, like, not because I'm not sure it'd be the best, but I just want to see what it looks like. Like the old dark, you know, deep purples and blacks and browns and grays that the old Dark Elder was painted like. Because I feel like the aesthetic only looks like sweet and cheerful and nice because of the white and blue they're using. And I'd like to see how sinister you can actually make these guys look, because I think you can.
Man, I think they're like, once you start getting into the like Teclis's plans, I think you're going to find that they are sinister. And this is just, they just put this up so the universe doesn't hate them. They wear bright colors.
G-Dub has hit on the hot topic of the reason everyone loves 40K so much is that no one's a good guy. Everyone's kind of a bad guy. And you can kind of make an argument for everyone. I think that's really, they're doing that so well with AOS.
Yeah. Well, once you put the blood worshippers or whatever in order, all bets are off. No, well, I'm down. I like all the models we got from this preview. And looking forward to getting some of them. And it's so weird, like the Crimson Court is like so spectacular that it makes those spectacular Chaos Warriors not seem so spectacular. It's weird.
Yeah, you might be right.
But they are spectacular. Like they're just killing it with the models.
Mm-hmm. You got a favorite, Tanya?
Out of all of the stuff from the preview?
It is.
So I know that this is going to sound weird, but like the models that I would most like to paint just for the sake of painting is the Daughters of Cain Endless Bells.
Ooh, the Blood Snake.
They look so, that blood snake. I'm like, oh, hey, baby, I want to paint you. Yeah. But I don't play Daughters of Cain. So it would literally just sit on a shelf and never get played. So
and you'd look up every now and then and say blood snake in your head and have a smile.
Exactly. It would make me happy.
We did get a glimpse into like the first kill, the first ninth edition. I don't know if it's going to be ninth edition or not, but a kill team expansion, the Pariah Nexus.
Yeah, that's one with the heavy intercessors in it.
Yeah, and this doesn't seem like super balanced as far as like model to model goes.
What's in it?
It's one squad of heavy intercessors and a Space Marine captain from the Space Marine side, and then a Necron Chronomancer and five new flayed ones.
Yeah. Just the wounds disparity is enormous. It's like three times the wounds.
But this looks to be played on a flat map. You know, you're not playing, it's not three-dimensional kill team. It looks like to be played on a flat map. So it's possible that the missions and stuff make it balanced. Like where the flayed ones are reoccurring or, I don't know what the deal is. I know nothing about it other than what it looks like. There has 34 objective cards, you know, a bunch of pieces of terrain. Looks like a double-sided board to play on. So if I had to guess that it's going to be like mission-based and that somehow makes sense if you were just to get this individually.
I wonder if the Necrons can like if you could pay to deep strike them or something.
I mean, I don't know, but I bet that there's something like, you know, once you kill two or three of them, some more come back someplace else. I mean, again, I'm completely guessing.
Because I find that deep striking or like because Dark Eldar kill team stuff in the elites, you can do that. It's quite powerful in kill team. So if they have some sort of like weird mechanic like that, I mean, maybe it'll balance itself out.
People are going to get it because they want the new models 100%. And yeah. And kill team players, you know, they probably already have a flow that they play kill team in. But I am interested to see how this adds to that or if it contributes to that in any way. I have a large circle of people that play kill team and always interested in getting, because you can go and get, you know, you have 5-8 models and you can play four games in a night. So, but this, like when Kill Team Arena came out, you played the game differently. And so if this is similar to that, I'm interested.
I don't know. That Chronomancer is just beautiful, though.
That is the truth. That is the truth. Do you want to jump over to the Dark Angel?
Oh, you know
rumor,
it.
Bits and bobs?
You know it.
At the time of recording, we don't have the book in hand. So I think maybe by the time this comes out or certainly after it comes out, there may be like a flow of information about Dark Angels. But at this time, we don't have it.
Fair. First, so in this preview, the first thing they gave us is the two psychic powers, right?
Mind wipe and then, what is it, engulfing fear?
Both of these seem real spicy for those at home. I'm very keen.
So, okay, mind wipe, if you haven't gone and checked out the preview, is that it's a malediction. Mind wipe has a warp charge value of 7, which is kind of on the expensive side nowadays. If manifested, select one enemy unit within 18 inches of this psyker, then select one aura ability that unit has. Until the start of your next psychic phase, that unit loses the aura ability.
I think this is amazing, especially for countering things like that would otherwise really hamper your abilities. Think the Silent King's aura of you fight last. Like, so big to just turn that off. So enormously big. And also really forces your opponent's hand when they use things like their 4+ deny stratagems. You could have this paired with another really potent buffing power, and you just know that they're going to have to use their defensive or negating psychic abilities, to deny this one. I think it's very exciting, and I like it a lot.
If you take a psyker, auras are so important in this game that you always take this power.
I'm not convinced that you just not auto-take the next one as well. Like, you might even want to do, like, Chief Apothecary and take the Tome of Malkador and take, like, 4 powers.
Well, you know there's probably going to be a stratagem that lets you sub out a psyche power or get another one or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, that one was one of the mainstay ones that a lot of codexes got last edition. So you'd be interested to see if anybody gets to this one.
Yeah, and I'm looking right now to see if the Death Guard Contagion abilities are an aura ability.
Yeah, I'm assuming they are, actually.
Yeah, I guess there's a lot of things you can do. You're not going to not pack Mind Wipe, period.
Yeah. So yeah, I think if you're going because you have to write stuff on your list, Mind Wipe is just one of those ones you won't leave it home.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it, like Rites of War You know, that aura of OBSEC, you just turned it off. And a lot of people are only, that's their, that and maybe like a unit or two of infiltrators is their only forms of OBSEC. And just, you just win the game on that one turn, you turn them off and their primary gets down to zero and you get a 15 or something. Huge swings available.
Yeah. So contagion abilities don't have the aura like in parentheses next to them.
Yep.
No, they do not. Whereas other things like Tainted Narthecium has aura next to it.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Feel No Pains from Apothecaries are auras as well. Jeez. Yes. Okay. Yeah. This is starting to open up.
I mean, you're taking the mind wipe.
Yeah. That's pretty sauce.
So Engulfing Fear is the next one. Engulfing Fear has a warp charge value of 7. It manifests as like one enemy unit within 24 inches of the psyker until the start of your next psychic phase. Subtract 1 from leadership characteristics or characteristic of models in that unit. The next bullet point, that unit cannot use the objective secured ability or any similar ability that allows them to control an objective marker regardless of the number of enemy models within range of an objective marker.
Yikes.
You want me to read the last point before you comment on that?
That would be enough, but continue.
Yeah, the last point is, if the result of the psychic test was equal to or greater than the unit's leadership characteristic, that unit cannot perform actions. If that unit is currently performing an action, it immediately fails.
So that's not as useful as it first seems, because most of the actions you perform aren't, get scored in the same turn. Yeah, like, you know, you scramble, it gets finished. But there are a couple of multi-turn ones that this will really hamper.
Well, I mean, the fact that it's essentially a free ability... On a power you might already take.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think it's very good.
It's got a big range too. 24 inches is huge once you factor in the movement of the librarian that has it.
I can't tell you why it's 24 inches. I think 24 inches is probably too big. This seems like it should be a 12 or an 18 incher, because you know you think a librarian on a with a jump pack, like, it's the whole table they can reach.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the double thing when they're back there on a, you know, they got their little, you know, the thing they took in their list specifically to hold backfield objectives or do something back there, and you just zip on over there and zot them.
And zot them.
You can't control that. I mean, they can control it if they're the only thing around, but stopping one of those actions you're talking about.
Oh, I just think both of these powers are some of the two best we've seen in the game so far.
They seem really, like, you know, we talk about stuff that wins games, being somewhere, controlling something, powerful aura abilities that we've talked about, because that's really, like, aura management is still a factor in this game.
Oh, for sure.
And now part of that management piece of the puzzle is somebody turning it off.
Like, I think the first instance I saw of this kind of power was, I think Night Lords had it. They had some kind of scream that they could do that would return off your auras.
I thought it was...
It turns off all your... It turns off every ability you've got, I think. It just makes you, like, null and void. Oh, sorry, even before that, there was the Forbidden Gem. Just kind of stops you. You don't exist for a phase, essentially.
Oh, nice. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and then the Admech flying thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Then there's I have no idea what it's called. Yep. Archaeothropter.
That's close enough. I mean, it sounds good. It's not right.
Da Vinci Bird of Weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've had a couple of them come in, but I think this might be the best version of it, because you can cast this from like 24 inches. Firstly, 24 inches away. It's a 7 to cast.
It's an 18-inch range on that one. The Mind Wipe?
Of course. Yeah, the Mind Wipe, yeah. But even then, like 18 inches is still a lot of the board.
Well, you're
now,
gonna move. Especially you're talking about a jump pack. Yeah. You're moving. You're 30 inches. Yeah.
The other one, next one that comes up is the what is it? There's a couple of relics. We've got the Heavenfall Blade back, which is nice. So it's just plus one attack. And they specifically said you can take it on a Talonmaster, because that was a weird caveat they had. In that, you know, they had all these relics in the index that we got, but from site before, you know, in the transition to 9th edition, and in the first paragraph it said you can't take any of these relics on a vehicle, and then one of the relics was the Corvus Oculus that is only for a vehicle model, being a Talonmaster, so that they had to fix that up later down the line. But I want to talk about, if I can direct this a little bit, Paul, I want to talk about one of the stratagems, Line Unbreakable. Absolutely. This is the first version of something like this we've seen. So 1 CP, use this stratagem at the start of the fight phase, select 1 Dark Angels infantry unit from your army. Until the end of that phase, that unit can only be selected as a target for melee attacks if the attacking model is within engagement range of it. Brackets, note this means that enemy models that are not within engagement range but are within half an inch of a model that is, do not get to attack. What do you think about that, guys?
Yeah. Until the end of the phase, the unit can only be selected as a target for melee attacks if the attacking model is within engagement range of the... And then goes on to say, note, this means the enemy models that are not within engagement range but are within half inch of that model from their own unit that is itself within half inch of the Dark Angel's infantry, unit cannot target it with melee attacks this phase.
Yeah, so essentially it just kind of breaks you down to only being able to attack with your front rank.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, you know, all of a sudden, I'm not afraid of orcs anymore. Orcs. I'm not afraid of a lot of demons units. Yeah. Tyranids, exactly. It's a really good response to a lot of these haughty melee-esque armies.
God, I'm thinking about that. Like, how often will that come up? And does the way you place your models help this, or can it help this?
Well, because what you want to do is give yourself, you can use terrain very nicely with this. Think about like choke points on the table, and then they can only get with a single rank, things like this. There's some funny things that I thought of doing with someone comes to attack you. Let's say a bunch of Sanguard, yeah? A bunch of Sanguinary Guard.
And you've got a small frontage.
Yeah, I've got this funny feeling. So they come in with a very narrow frontage, but they're going to get a pile in and consolidate and get a bunch of some more stuff in. So in response, you 2 CP interrupt and change your own frontage so that to limit their attacks. Like you pile in certain ways to limit the amount of guys that they've got, like stop them up from their own pile in around your flanks. And then you could go from getting like eight of their 10 attacking to, I don't know, 6 or 5 of them. And if you're able to do that, that will really swing some stuff, especially with maybe some of the sillier resilient things for Dark Angels being still in the game. I've got some predictions that we're not going to see a change to the perma-transhuman for Terminators, which has made them a tough pill for literally everybody. Well, a very tough steak to chew for everybody involved.
No, I'm starting to see this now, and that's where I was going with it, or where my mind is going with it, is a way to make those Terminators even more worth it.
Like, it would be cool to just have a line of Terminators in front of your army, just holding the line against everything. It is very, very cool.
I am a fan of Terminators. I like the way they look on the table. I think they're something that's like specifically 40K. You know, we've seen imitations of them in the form of like power armor and stuff and video games and whatever. But I think that a Space Marine Terminator is like super 40K.
Absolutely.
And then having them exist on the table for longer and have the game kind of support them, I think is really cool.
Well, it's about time. They were a joke for the longest time. It was very, very sad that from like essentially from 6th to 8th edition, they were pretty much unheralded.
They would work enough of the time to keep the dream alive.
Just enough to keep you like to give you the taste in your mouth, but not enough to feel full.
That's it. So like sometimes you like, I think a lot, if you play Terminators with regularity, you have a story to where, oh, I happened to get my whole squad of Terminators into combat and they did something impressive, or one Terminator held out against impossible odds.
Mm.
But like for every one of those stories, there's like 50 stories about how you got gunned down by lasguns.
Absolutely right, dude.
But there's way less of that now, and I enjoy it.
So a little off, like it's not really off topic, but like the first time that I read the very first book in the Horus Heresy series where the Terminators go in and basically like punch down a wall, like this big wall in this hold or whatever, I was like, that is bad. I didn't think Terminators could do that because I had only experienced them on the table, right? Yeah. And I was just like, now if the game could somehow like get this idea from the lore across into the Terminators, then they would be so cool. So it's kind of nice that they're getting some tools to maybe be a little bit more resilient.
Yeah, I agree. And just is seeing them, especially Dark Angel Terminators, they're gorgeous models.
Yeah, they're real nice. They're some of the nicest models that are, you know, quite old out there, because they're all like, you know, close to 10 years, if not 10 years old now.
Even the plastic ones, I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Eldar players are crying right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got Howling Banshees. It's fine. No, they need a lot more. They do. I want to see what they can do with like, what does a this generation G-dub Striking Scorpion look like? Because I think I'm just going to have my mind blown.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know. So what is that your, the strategy? Do you like the next one?
Well, the next one's just kind of something that Dark Angels have had since all through 8th edition, was that we always had some version of fallback and shoot. So I assumed we were going to get some strat associated with that. But then they went and changed, or at least they partially changed our super doctrine. We used to have, in Deb Doctrine, we would get +6 inch range to rapid fire and heavy weapons. And now it looks like that might stay the same, or it might change entirely. Because right now what we've got is And they specifically say this is only half of it. And while the tactical doctrine is active for your army, infantry models in your army, excluding Deathwing, important to note, can make attacks with rapid fire and assault weapons, excluding blast, whilst engaging range of enemy units. So it boils down to that we hit on fives and in combat with our rapid fire and assault weapons.
Like bolters and stuff, yeah.
Rapid fire and assault, so bolters. But luckily they made the caveat that Deathwing can't do this because I think that would be too much.
Ah, I wonder
storm bolters and...
Does this make aggressors better for Dark Angels?
It does. That's the first thing that came to my mind was like, wow, Dark Angels aggressors are actually really good. And the important thing with the 5+, now me and my friends talked about this when I first read it, but I haven't had it specifically confirmed that this will be how it works, but right now it's very close to it. Because Dark Angels get a +1 to hit when they didn't move in the preceding movement phase, like e.g. in your turn when you charge us, we would hit on fours with that ability rather than fives most of the time.
I'm liking the sound of that.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty cool. I like that a lot. I'm not sure how powerful a potent is going to be if you don't build for it, but if you build for it, it can be quite nice.
Yeah, there's a start collecting box that's coming out with these guys or this codex that's pretty stout for any Marine player.
Yeah, it's got the Indominus Chaplain in it, yeah?
It's got the Skull Face with the Trench Coat Chaplain and a Redemptor Dread.
Yeah, and Redemptor Dreads are very good, guys.
Quite
good, yes.
And they've been out of stock a lot of places recently also. I guess because they're all in this box right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just for Dark Angels, but they will paint up green and bone very nicely.
The start collecting kits, I haven't looked at them. They're not push fit models, are they?
I don't know. I mean, there is an easy build Redemptor kit, but I don't think this is the easy build version.
Fair.
Yeah, the ones that come in like these starter boxes, like with a rule book and that kind of stuff, are typically easy build type models. The ones that come in the, I don't even know if this is the start collecting, but it's the Battle Force kits are typically not easy build, and I don't think these are easy build.
No, sick.
But anyway, it's going to be a good release, I think. Looking forward to how the Dark Angels shape up, especially, look, I think every codex we've seen so far has been a winner.
Yeah, I think so. If I was going to rate them right now off what we've seen, I feel like the best codex is the Necron one. Mostly just because I think that from where it was to where it's come now is so well done.
Yeah. No, there's definitely some flow and options. Like I've rarely seen two of the same Necron list.
Yeah, well that was the issue with them before, wasn't it? They never had variety. I don't know how prevalent Necrons were in your scene, but you know, I always felt like I was playing pretty much the same version of the list.
Like Wraith Spam?
Yeah, or destroyers. Like it was nine destroyers, two or three squads of destroyers and whatever else fit, or a bunch of wraiths and whatever else fit.
Yeah,
and then they always came with their three Doomsday Arcs because there was nothing else that could kill a tank in their army.
Mm-hmm.
Just it was a little bit sad, but now, man, there are as many Necron lists as there are units, which is very exciting.
Yeah, so I'm not kidding. I've not seen two model for model lists the same out of any Necron player, and I think that's really cool.
Mm. On top of that, I see Necron lists that I think are very scary in shooting. I see Necron lists that I think are very scary in combat. And I think that's amazingly good for them as well.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, I haven't seen Nightbringer as represented as much as I thought I was going to because he is obnoxious.
He is. I actually had to experience the joy that is the Nightbringer this Sunday. I had a game and I knew he was scary, but now it's like I really know how scary he is.
Were you keeping a kill count? Were you eventually able to get him down?
No. Also, like, I just want a caveat. Like, I don't normally blame the dice, but like my dice rolling was so bad that like halfway through the game, my opponent was like, "What the heck is going on here?" And I was like, "I have no idea. Let's just keep going."
You just gotta you gotta power through it, hoping the averages catch back up to you for the next game.
Yeah. It was fun. It was a lot of fun though. Yeah.
So we can go ahead and wrap this up. I want everybody to please join in, tune in at the various Twitch things and stuff, YouTube, all the stuff. I'll put the links in the show notes for the Las Vegas Open coverage going on probably as you're listening to this. So wrap this up, get on over and check us out. Man, it's going to be a blast.
It's going to be the best. Can't wait, man.
Well, Tanya, Adam, thanks for joining me this week.
What absolute pleasure, as it is every week, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see y'all soon.
Bye-bye.
We'll be right back. make my day.